Speak when you're spoken to. Maybe you heard that instruction once upon a time. Maybe you've said it before. It's sometimes followed by the supporting notion that children should be seen but not heard, an idea that's meant to communicate respect, authority, and a clear and efficient sense of hierarchy. Of course, this familiar philosophy also assumes a couple of things. First, that a child is not a full person with a real voice. And second, that adults are always the ones with the important things to say. But Samuel is a child when we meet him. That's the first thing we hear in this passage, the boy, Samuel. The hero of the Jewish Christian faith, the anointer of kings, the prophet to the populace, he was at first the boy Samuel who heard from God. Tradition holds that he's around 12 years old in the passage we read today, but we meet him much earlier than that, as from his earliest days he was in the house of the Lord, brought there by his bold and faithful mother, Hannah. He was dedicated to God, and as chapter 2 describes, he grew in stature and in favor with the Lord and with the people. And that's a comforting notion for many of us who have brought our youngest ones to church this morning on this back-to-school Sunday. It's also a move-up Sunday, which means that kids have promoted to new grades in Sunday school, new classes on our children's wing. Some new second graders are sitting through a sermon for the very first time, and right about now they are wondering, wait, how long is he going to talk? The answer, kids, is 18 to 22 minutes. You can time me and let me know. The prayer does not count as part of the time, though. Now, this also means that some four-year-olds are in worship today for the very first time, like a certain four-year-old from my family who has wandered out to junior church now. When his older siblings realized that this would be his very first Sunday in the sanctuary, the general consensus in our household was, oh no, Warner's not ready, they said. Yes, the one that we call the wild man has only ever known the sanctuary as a place to run around laps and to crawl beneath the pews while waiting for his father to shake hands at the end of the service. So I imagine that this makes about as much sense as if we were all gathered in the church gym right about now. But then again, who's ready? Who's ever ready? Certainly, church doesn't exist for people who are ready. Church is not only for people who are composed or prepared or silent or meeting all standards of decorum. No. Many of you know that from 2005 to 2009, I served as an associate pastor at a church in Nashville, Emmanuel Baptist, a loving church that bears a lot of similarity to us here at First Baptist Greensboro. And part of my time overlapped with Emmanuel's interim pastor, who became a good friend to me to this day, Reverend Charles Foster Johnson, Charlie. And he is this larger-than-life Texas preacher who is charismatic, he's somewhat iconoclastic, he has this engaging style and verve, he strides confidently about the pulpit. Today he is the head of an organization he founded called Pastors for Texas Children, which advocates for public schools in his home state. And he and Emmanuel Baptist matched about as well as his suits matched his snakeskin cowboy boots. It was a stylish match. It was bold. It was unconventional, but it worked beautifully. One particular Sunday, I remember especially, a church visitor and her toddler were sitting in the sanctuary somewhere near the back for the very first time. And this child had been making some noise through the service. There were cries and there were questions, and it was all provoking some sideways glances, some nervous shifting of weight in the seats. Now, everybody was kind so far, but there was some tension. I could feel it in my own shoulders sitting down front. And during the sermon, Charlie began to stride about the pulpit, and that's when the child's noise escalated. And finally, this mother, very hurriedly and desperately, she got embarrassed and she gathered her things to leave quickly. And then Charlie just stopped his sermon and he said, "Mama, you stay right there. That baby's a gift to this church." And the whole room did what you just did. The whole room changed. We could all feel it. I'd like to believe that even that child sensed it. That it told us something about who we are as a community and how our ability to welcome the restless and the unrestrained, it says something about our ability to welcome all of the people of God and the fullness of the work of God in this world. That child is a gift. And so Hannah believed it. Of her son, Samuel. And so we know it of the children, the youth, the young people who grace this place of worship, who grow in stature and favor in this house of the Lord. And we can see how it was true of Samuel. First, Samuel could hear what others could not hear. The word of the Lord was rare in those days, the passage describes. God was silent, at least from what most people could hear. This recalls for me a scene from George Bernard Shaw's play on the life of Joan of Arc. And the Archbishop and King Charles are interrogating Joan of Arc when the Archbishop asks her, "How do you know you are right?" And Joan answers, "Well, my voices." And the king interrupts, "Oh, your voices, your voices. Well, why don't your voices come to me? I'm the king, not you." And Joan responds, "Well, they do come, but you do not hear them." Samuel was listening, and Samuel could hear. He could hear what others could not hear. Samuel was lying down in the temple, the passage describes, where the ark of God was. He was near to it, and the Lord called Samuel, Samuel, and Samuel could hear. And maybe it wasn't in spite of the fact that he was a boy, but precisely because of it. The poet Francis Thomas, the 19th century poet, once asked, "Do you know what it is to be a child? It is to be something very different from the adult of today. It is to have a spirit yet streaming from the waters of baptism. It is to believe in love, to believe in loveliness, to believe in belief." And you know this. And you know even more of what it is to be a child. It's to live with curiosity. It's to shed inhibition. It's to make noise freely. It's to dance readily. It's to ask good questions. "Daddy, where does the ocean end? And why are you wearing a work shirt? It's Saturday. And when someone dies, why do we cry?" All questions I've heard in the last week from my children that reflect a kind of freedom of thought and ease of expression that might enable someone to hear when God is silent and to see when visions are few. It's what the theologian Marcus Borg once described, telling of a young boy who was so excited to welcome his baby sister. And when she came into the world and into the home, the boy was just in love. He wanted to hold her, he wanted to play with her, he wanted to talk to her. And one day, his mother came into the room and overheard him at her crib saying to his baby sister, "Can you tell me about God? I think I'm forgetting." And maybe you've forgotten. Well, they were forgetting in Israel, rulers and priests and all manner of important people with supposedly all the right things to say. They were forgetting. I imagine that their names were being called, some of them too, but they weren't being heard. But this boy, Samuel, with his openness, with his proximity to his Creator, with his abundant curiosity, could hear what others could not. Which leads Samuel to do a second thing. He got up, the text describes, and he went to Eli. Once Samuel hears, he goes to someone that he trusts. Now, Eli was not perfect. In fact, right after The text describes the rare visions of that time. It tells of Eli's failing eyesight. He was the embodiment of the people's own impairment, you see. And just before our text, in chapter 2, we learn of this string of injustices that come from Eli's sons, which the priest does nothing to correct despite the strongest urgings. He was not perfect. No, the word of the Lord was rare in those days, and it's no exaggeration to say that Eli carries some of the blame for that. He can't hear God himself, not any longer. But he helps Samuel to hear. Samuel cannot recognize God's voice on his own. It is Eli who first realizes that the Lord is attempting to speak to the boy. And Samuel does not know what to say. And so it's Eli that teaches him to form those words, enduring to say, "Here I am." Samuel still wonders why this word has come to him at all, and it's Eli who tells him later in the passage, "It is the Lord, Samuel." Because most people don't hear God without Eli. We all need those people that we can go to when we hear something we don't understand, or when we find ourselves in a place where the way is not yet clear. My friend Dr. John Roberts is a retired minister who served with me in the board of Wake Divinity School a few years ago, and I got to benefit from his stories and his wisdom a couple times a year at meetings, like once over lunch when he told me about the favorite children's sermon that he had given in his career. It had been years ago, and he gathered all of the children around, and he told them the story of Lazarus that we know, and he imagined with them a particular detail of the story. What must it have been like, children, for Lazarus, waking up in that tomb, still tied up in his grave clothes? He couldn't see. He probably couldn't move. And to illustrate, Dr. Roberts had one willing child stand up, and he wrapped him up in paper towels from head all the way down to toe. "How's he going to move?" he asked the other kids. "He can't walk. He can't run, can he? How's he going to move?" And finally, the kids shouted, "Well, he'll have to hop." "That's right," Dr. Roberts said. And then he began to teach the kids something he called the Lazarus hop. And it went like this. Everybody stood up, and then the organist played the theme of the Addams Family. Da-na-na-na. Only instead of the snap, they would hop. Da-na-na-na, hop, hop. That's the only time I'm doing it. Da-na-na-na. Hop, hop, da-na-na-na, hop, da-na-na-na, hop, da-na-na-na, hop, hop. And on it went. The whole sanctuary is filling up with laughter at all of these hopping kids and plenty of adults moving in their seats until the music just stopped abruptly and Dr. Roberts crouched down. "Come here, children," he said. And in a soft voice he told them, "There will be times in your life when you feel bound up, when you can't see where you're going, when maybe you feel like you can't even move, and I want you to remember in those moments to listen for the voices that you trust, and whatever it takes, I want you to move towards those voices, even if you have to hop." And so, yes, children, move to those you can trust, and yes, church, let us move to those that we can trust, and what's more, let us be those that one another can trust. There is no more important role for the church to play than to help women and men and all people, children and youth in all ages, hear and discern the voice of God that calls each of our names. And so Samuel got up and he went to Eli, and our church is full of such people. They are Sunday school teachers and youth leaders and music directors and ministers and friends who shake hands in the pews and pass a word of peace, and those who sit around tables midweek for a meal, and those who come to us when we're grieving, and those who share in the fullness of our joy and times of celebration, those who, when any of us is lying in the dark, we can get up and approach, can learn that God is speaking still, And we're not perfect, but we can help one another to know the voice of God that calls for us. Samuel went to Eli. And he went to Eli because he trusted him, yes. But I think there was another reason. He went to Eli because he thought God's voice was Eli's voice. In other words, God's voice to Samuel, it sounded like Eli's voice. Have you ever considered that your voice might sound like God's voice? Well, it's so important to remember as we consider the next thing that Samuel does. Because Samuel, through the wisdom of Eli, through the voice of God calling to him, Samuel comes to realize that he has a voice too. That he's not merely a listener, he's a speaker. God helps Samuel to learn how to speak when spoken to, you see. That is, when God has spoken to you the truth of who you are to speak the same to others. It's what Christina shared so beautifully with all of us today, and especially with our students and teachers. It's what's written in the prayer that you have hopefully picked up on this card today. Lord, speak to me. And then, Lord, help me to use my voice for what is right. Help me to speak love to all of your people. Help me to speak up for what is true and just and holy. May I speak as you have spoken to me, Lord. And so Samuel does. He grows to become this prophet who speaks for the Lord. Samuel is the one who breaks the divine silence in those days, as Samuel's words, the passage tells us later, they came to all of Israel. And all of this, from the boy who was lying down in the dark in the temple. Now, I don't mean to idealize him, and I certainly don't mean to romanticize the experience of childhood or children today. In fact, in the ancient world, in Samuel's time, children were not primarily understood as adorable or as innocent, as angelic or idyllic. No, they were often seen as a burden. They were sometimes compared to servants in a household economy. Fewer than half of children born made it to adulthood. In fact, in other words, the most salient characteristic of a child in the ancient world is that they were extraordinarily vulnerable. They were perhaps the most vulnerable beings in their society. And don't miss the meaning here. That means that God speaks to those who are the most vulnerable. And so God calls us to be a church for those who are most vulnerable, most marginalized, most forgotten, those who have been seen but not really heard. And those who have been treated by this world and its systems as though they are dispensable and expendable should wait to speak, should be patient to act. Should let others tell them what God is doing and what God is saying and what God is up to. In fact, they are the ones to whom the voice of God comes when others can't hear. And they are the ones who come to speak the voice of God amidst a time that is otherwise silent. And later in the story, one who comes well after Samuel, one descended from the king that Samuel himself will anoint. Well, that one, Jesus declares that our ability to welcome the vulnerable, the children, that it is a direct reflection of our ability to welcome the kingdom of God in our midst. It was a few years ago, and a family had brought their young children to church. For one of the first times, they had brought the children to this church, in fact. They were somewhere near the back. They were trying to occupy their young kids. They were probably wondering if everything was okay. They were feeling a bit uncertain. And those children, well, you know, they were probably just wanting to crawl beneath the pews or run laps down the aisles. Now, in front of this family, there were some of our longer-termed experienced members. And so this family worried that they were disturbing people as they rustled papers, as they opened up the occasional peppermint as quietly as they could. As they worried that the questions their children asked would cause people to turn around in their seats. And so this went on for the whole of the service, interspersed with breaks for bathroom and water when allowed, when at the end, a member seated in front of them turned around and said to them, "I want you to know," she said, "that all that noise in the service, it was just the best part of my week." Yes, may this be a church where anyone who has ever seemed not quite ready, where anyone, any single one who has ever felt vulnerable in this world or forgotten or overlooked or overshadowed or seen and not heard, where any single one finds us all echoing the words that that saint said that day, "I'm so glad you were here. We need those voices." Amen.